Thank you for listening to One Blunt Woman. I'm Wanda Means. I'm the author of my book, The Shelf Life of a Secret, and my blog, Jesus Divorce and Over 40. And today I have a very special guest on. I had him on a couple weeks ago, and I've invited him back because his book is so amazing. We could only finish half of it, which even then I don't even think we touched on it plenty. His name is Stefan Arneau. He is from Canada. He is the author of Hard Times Create Strong Men. And I have to tell you, Stefan, I loved your book. Welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me back, Wanda.
I have to tell you, your book, there's four sections to it. There's money, sex, religion, and politics. And we covered money and sex and women in the last show. I mean, we barely touched upon it. But now I wanted to talk about religion and politics on this section of the show. And there again, I think we can just touch the surface. I think anyone, if you want to read a book, I don't care if you're a woman or a man or any of the other 63 genders. Good God, we talked about that in the last show, Stefan. I mean, I couldn't even pronounce half those names. I urge you to get his book. It really has made me think. So in this section, I had a bunch of questions I wanted to ask you on this podcast today, because we wanted to get into religion and politics. And for those of you who don't know, Stefan, when he wrote this book, he fasted for 18 days in the Costa Rica jungle, and where he said he was alone with his thoughts and his demons and his fears, and his goal was to starve his addictions and weaknesses. Mission accomplished, no?
I don't know, man. You go out there and you starve those demons, but they can come back just as fast.
You think they come back quicker?
No, I've been out there fasting three times now, Wanda, and every time I come back, I have less and less demons, less and less problems. But you know, I think that it's sort of like, you know, a diet. It doesn't solve all your problems. It's something for a little bit, and you know, it's constant maintenance that keeps the demons away, I think.
Constant maintenance. Okay, that's good. In the book, you say man can only find the blackness of the abyss in his addictions. And you also talk about a spiritual bankruptcy. And I have to tell you, sometimes I do feel spiritually bankrupt. And you also say that there are four parts to a man. And I'm going to say man because I'm not going to talk about the other 63 genders. I'm just going to say man. And when I say man, I say everyone, okay?
Human,
right. There's the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, and the physical. And what you say is if you don't have the spiritual, then you're less likely to have the emotional, which would make you half a man, right?
Mm-hmm. So you have to be in touch with all four of those parts of you. Otherwise, you're a lopsided person.
So you say we don't. So atheism, you think, is a problem. We need to avoid it. We need to connect with religion, because religion, I've always said religion is a way to control the masses. So what you've said is with religion, it creates civilization amongst people and eliminates cannibalism.
That's right. That's right.
I got to tell you, I really don't want to be eaten, but I understand if that's your only mode of survival. And what you talk about is we need these hard times because it creates strong men. And we're at the end of this 80-year cycle, which I want to get into. But before we get, because I was really fascinated by that, because the 80-year cycle ends in 2020 and it's 2019. So I really am curious to know what happens in 2020, what you think. But I'm going to step back a second, because you had said, when you were in Costa Rica, my question is, why did you go to Costa Rica? Why didn't you do it in Canada?
Why didn't I fast, as in not eat for 18 days or 30 days or 40 days?
In a robe only in Canada. I mean, the answer is obvious. It's too fucking cold, right? I mean,
yeah, well, I've been fasting for a couple of years, Wanda, and I go down to the jungle in Costa Rica where it's warm and nice, and the jungle is really an interesting place to be for an extended period of time. You know, there's monkeys and snakes and scorpions and armadillos and all these animals. But Canada at that time of year in January, February, December, January, February is a frozen wasteland. It's minus 40, so it's another excuse to get out of Canada. But
It was partly a joke, Stefan. It was partly a joke. Obviously, I knew you couldn't do it there. But keep going. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you know, it's initially I went fasting for health reasons. And then I noticed all these other benefits. You know, my mind got clear, my emotions got clear. I sorted out some of my problems. I would write a couple books every time I went fasting. So I've been fasting 3 years in a row down in Costa Rica, and I always get great benefits from going down there and being by myself.
Didn't you write like 200,000 words in 11 days? That's insane.
Yeah, I wrote two books. I wrote The Close and I wrote Hard Times Create Strong Men on that fast. And then this fast, this year I'm working on five books that have come from the jungle. So every year I go down the jungle and I reinvent myself and I, you know, write some new material and I reboot my life every time I go there.
So do you run out of ink in your pens?
That actually happened. Yeah, this last year I actually ran out of all the ink and all the pens and had to borrow pens up from the people on the plane on the way home.
So do you have like a satellite phone for an true emergency, or are you just, you're out there surviving?
Well, it's pretty much, it's not like that hardcore. I mean, you're halfway between camping and a resort. You know, the rooms you stay in is almost camping, and then the common area is almost a resort. So I mean, it's
scorpions
in
you were picturing like Bear Grylls shit. Like.
Yes, I was. It's exactly what I was picturing. I've seen that guy's show. He's really fascinating, by the way. So no, you had running water.
Yeah, there's running water. There's not hot water, but there is water. And you know, like I said, it's halfway between a resort in some places, halfway between camping. You know, you got all the nature. You're in the middle of the jungle. Like there's freaking huge scorpion in your bed one night. There's a tarantula on the floor. There's an armadillo walking around. Like you're actually in the middle of nowhere. Like if somebody got messed up, I wouldn't be able to tell you where we are. But at the same time, you know, you got some amenities out there.
So everybody that goes to this place is alone.
What do you mean by alone?
I mean, they're not. This is not a couple's retreat.
No.
This is where you go to dig deep in your own self.
That's right. No sex, Wanda. You're not supposed to have sex. You're not supposed to.
Oh my God! Did I bring up sex?
And hey, well, you're a Scorpio. You're bringing it up all the time.
Speaking of sex, well, I wonder. Well, look at your book. The thickest part of your book was all about sex and women. All divine creation, all invention, all innovation. It was to have an orgasm with a woman. I mean, come on. Everything that we see is because some guy wanted to get off, right? I'm going to add to that. I'm going to add to that.
A little bit of a hyperbole, but I think it's true.
I'm going to add to that. I've always said this. Every single one of us is here because the man got off and not the woman. All procreation is because the man, I mean, obviously you need the egg. I get that. But I don't have to have an orgasm in order to have a child. But you do. I think all of history is skewed because of that one thing, right? And you also talk about sex is, in order to have sex, the man has to have an erect penis. The woman doesn't have to be aroused. She's just a hole. I mean, you've pinpointed something that I've talked about for so long. And I mean, the world revolves around sex. I mean, I'm in the midst of teenage hell and I'm trying to keep the boys away from the girls because all the boys want to do is have sex. And all boys masturbate and girls are like, oh, I don't do that. That's gross. And I'm like, no, you need to understand your body, but they don't. And so they start at a young age where the boys start dominating at a young age. You even say that somewhere where you said boys are bartering blowjobs for a girl's first kiss. I mean, I have a son in middle school.
That's where it's at right now. I've heard that's the case. I mean, I haven't been in middle school for a long time, so I haven't done it myself, but that's what I hear word on the street is.
Well, it's one thing to live it. It's a whole other thing to live it through your children four times. So you talk about connecting with infinite intelligence versus synthetic intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so that verbiage is from a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And
you quote him a lot in your book, by the way.
Yeah, that's the Bible of making money, if you will. And Napoleon Hill interviewed the 500 richest men in the world about 100 years ago or so. And a lot of what he teaches in there is a lot of spiritual laws. The book isn't about money, Think and Grow Rich. it's mostly about spiritual laws and attracting value and attracting money. And one of the things he talks about is synthetic intelligence, which is taking other people's ideas and putting them together, versus infinite intelligence, which is a flash of brilliance, or it could be a hunch, or, you know, maybe you pray and you get the answer, or you meditate, the idea just comes to you. And all the greatest inventions in history have typically been infinite intelligence. And even my book, Their Hard Times Create Strong Men, I wrote it using infinite intelligence rather than synthetic intelligence. It was channeled. It was channeled from a divine source rather than just pasted together. You know, some people look at writing books and they go, oh my God, I can never write a book. But if you're channeling it and it just comes to you, that's a little bit different than trying to piece it together with, you know, tape and scissors.
Well, synthetic intelligence is everything that's already written, right?
Yeah, you're piecing together other people's material.
Right. And so, but you quote a lot in your book. So, because you use it brilliantly, your quotes. And I think they're all really, I don't like the word perfect, but they're all positioned nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did that. I did the quotes in there mostly to have grounding to my arguments because, you know, one of the first things when you start talking about money, sex, religion, politics, God, people say, well, says who, right? They say, who are you? Who the fuck is Stefan Arnie? That's what they say to me.
Right.
Well, you know, if I put quotes in there and I back up my arguments with other people, like Marcus Aurelius, the greatest emperor of Rome, or if I back it up with Socrates or Plato, or if I back it up with, you know, Napoleon Hill, then suddenly I have an argument. So I use a lot of those quotes in there to back up my thesis, but I don't necessarily, you know, I don't think the ideas in there really were a synthesis of other people. It was, I channeled them and then I stuck those quotes in to add grounding to it.
Well, you quote Marcus Aurelius, you said the happiness of your life depends upon the quality of your thoughts. That is so true. I mean, if I'm sitting here stewing, women like to stew, nothing good comes of that. So I literally have to tell myself to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that quote in at the end, and you could have put that quote all over the book. Okay, so moving on, you talk about subversion. Subversion scares me. Do we think that all those people crossing our border, is this a method of subversion? I mean, you talk about the art of war, you know, where you say it's the art of war is, what was the quote he says? Not to kill them physically, but to get them mentally along those lines.
The ultimate warrior takes the city without ever waging war or something like that, you know?
Right, right. So is this what's happening right now? I never talk politics on the show, but I do find that what you wrote on subversion, it scared me, honestly. Is this what's going to happen to us? Subversion.
Wanda, I mean, America is the new Rome. You know, if you look at Rome, if you look at Greece, if you look at the other empires, the Western empires, they've all fallen. And what happens in empires is usually they're born out of stoicism. They're born out of hard times and hard values and violence and war. And they have strong values at the beginning. And then what happens is as people get more comfortable, I write in my book, Hard Times Create Strong Men. Strong men create good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times.
That's your 80-year cycle.
The values become soft. And, you know, like if you look at the schools nowadays, the schools used to teach Christianity. They don't anymore. The schools used to teach capitalism. They don't anymore. They teach communism. They teach atheism. So
we can't even have a Christmas play anymore. So, yes, I get it.
Yeah, so what happened is, you know, the values came over from communist Russia in the Cold War. The communist subverters sent over the homosexuals, they sent over the feminists, they sent over all these ideas because Russia couldn't beat America with guns and bombs and tanks. So they sent their ideas over and now it's been, oh gosh, that was 1960. So it's been, what is that, 60 years now. And those ideas are now entrenched in the universities. It's entrenched in the school system. And we have a little communist factory called the university. We have a little atheist factory called the university. And America is a country that was born out of freedom. It was born out of capitalism and it was born out of Christianity. And those values are being subverted and destroyed. And now you have a weak people that doesn't even know what their values are. And suddenly that's how the empire falls. You know, if you look at Rome, they used to have their own code of honor and their own values and their own language. And what happened was over time,
the barbarians came, right?
The barbarians came, and you know, at the end of Rome, you know, the barbarians just walked right in. They didn't even have to fight. They just walked right in and nobody stopped them.
So do you think that's what's going to happen? Like, okay, so hold on. Canada, do you teach religion in school in Canada?
No, we're like a more liberal version of America. And yeah, we, you know, Canada's,
I think more people would move
experience
to Canada if it wasn't so fucking cold.
Well, you should come on up. I mean, you're just down the road. You're in Dallas and I'm in Winnipeg. We're on the same street.
Straight up 35. But so should we be scared? Because so now I can get into your 80-year cycle that you talk about. 1940, yeah. We had World War II. And that's, you know, those hard times created very strong men, right? Mm-hmm. So then 20 years later, the 60s came and we didn't have to be strong anymore because we weren't on the brink of, you know, oblivion. And so now we don't have to be in survival mode anymore. So the 60s came about. And what happened in the 60s?
Well, the 60s was the rise of, you had feminism, you had all these new ideas, you had the hippies, you know, things ended up, it was a golden age for America in the 60s. And golden age for Canada too. And it kept rising and rising until you get to 1980, 2000. And then, you know, in the book, I draw that bell curve graph where it just gets better and better.
Right.
And now we're at the bottom of the slide right now.
I see that.
And we're ready to go into 2020, which, you know, 80 years ago was World War II and 80 years before that was American Civil War. So the question is it going to be a big world war or is it going to be an American Civil War? I'm not sure which it's going to be. But something's going to happen, and if you look at the political climate, you know, the left and right in America are both getting kind of violent. They're getting almost hateful to each other.
I mean, I can't even have a civilized conversation with my liberal friends. And I mean,
right.
I've had friends completely cut me off and say I want nothing to do with you, and I'm not even political. I mean, it's shoved in my you can't reason with them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Mm-hmm. Why is there such hate?
Well, I think part of it has to do, you know, if you look at Nazi Germany in the 40s, like Germany was poor. They were very, very poor and they were very messed up and they were demoralized. And because they were so poor and they were so demoralized, they got really extreme. And I think what's happening in America now is the people are poorer than ever. They're poor, they're demoralized. And some people think that, you know, this new idea called communism is going to work, and that's what they're shooting for.
Communism will never work here. That's never going to come. That's never going to be the mainstream.
I don't know. I don't know. You never know, Wanda. I mean, like, you know, if you look at Russia, I'm sure they didn't think communism was going to take over, but then they lost a war, and this was in 1917. They lost a war, and the army came home, and the people were starving in the streets, and the Tsar said, shoot the people to the military, and the military turned around and shot him, and the military took over the government for 80 years, and they had brutal communism where millions and millions of people died over the next 80 years. It was a brutal regime. So I don't think anybody planned for that to happen, but it just kind of happened.
Okay. I don't see it happening here, but I do see the big division. I'm not sure if Trump is to blame for that, because you do talk about Trump in the politics section of your book. You know,
well, Trump's just a man. I mean, he's just a guy, and he's just you know, he somehow is trying to run this ship. But you know, the problems here have been going for a long time. These are 60-year problems. So you know, Trump was like a little boy when these problems started.
Well, that's what you say.
Now
we forget.
They're coming to a,
You, that's why you say we had these 80-year cycles, because everyone that was alive then is 100 now, you know, because they were 20 when they were at war and they're dead now, right? And so we have forgotten. So now, well, we don't feel the pain anymore because we weren't there during the pain. So that's why the 80-year cycle continues and will continue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so fascinating to me, this 80-year cycle. And I'm really concerned about 2020 because, you know, that's next year. I mean, it's coming up. I mean, will it be a war? You said a currency war. Will it be an actual war? I mean, what's it going to be? What do you think?
Well, I think there's a couple ways that it can go. And at the end of the day, you know, you've got some problems like China and Russia they're pretty strong countries, and they have if they want to start trading oil in their own currency, that would be kind of weird for the United States. Like I said, there could potentially be a civil war. There could be a massive devaluation of the American dollar, where suddenly the U.S. dollar is not worth anything, and you guys can't import. You know, the U.S. is a big importer of goods. Like, you know, they don't export as much as they used to in the United States. So there's a lot of like global things that could happen. I'm not sure if anybody knows what it would be. You know, if you look at World War One, it was Archduke Ferdinand got shot, and all of a sudden there's a war. Like, you know, it could be a small thing like that. Who knows? The point is, it's an 80-year cycle. Things boil over in that 80-ish years. You've also got the 250-year cycle of democracy, in which, you know, America was born in 1776. And in 2026, that's 250 years of America. So that means that you could see the end of democracy, and you could end up with Emperor Trump, which,
well,
which
it won't
is where,
be, well,
you know,
I mean,
you turn from a democracy into a tyranny. So
do you
there's
think
a lot
he's
of like, historical
win?
Cycles.
Do you
Sorry?
Think he's going to win in 2020?
Oh, I think Trump will. I mean, he's got the goods. He's the best option over there, and he can actually run it. But at the end of the day, it
you
sort
don't
of
think
doesn't
Beto's
matter
gonna
who's
do it?
Running. You don't think who?
Beto.
Oh, I don't know who that is. I don't
oh,
know, man.
I'm so
I
happy mean, you don't know who he is.
Well, he's more of a localized sensation being in Texas.
I know, but like he thinks he's the next president.
Oh, absolutely does.
He's a Democrat. He's young. He's idealistic. But maybe when... Maybe now that we think the word idealistic, mean that could be changing the way we all think into not a good way of thinking. Is that what ideology is? Is that what they're teaching these kids in college?
I mean, well, they you know, like I said, they're teaching the kids communism and atheism right now. And it, like, here's another crazy fact. You know, one of the major books in economics in the United States universities is Karl Marx, Das Kapital. That's a failure of economics. But they're teaching kids Karl Marx in university now. And that's really messed up. You know, in the 60s, they'd throw you in jail for being a communist. And now everybody can be a communist and it's no big deal.
Well, okay. So speaking of being thrown in jail, there was a woman in Dubai who was arrested because she was at her ex-husband's funeral. And on Facebook, she had written a negative comment about his current wife. And so they arrested her. I mean, that is insane to me. Are we going? I mean, women have no rights throughout the world. So I want to go back and my favorite section, of course, was your second section when you talk about women and sex and how men and women, like men are masculine and women are feminine and the polarization of the two. But my question is, will there ever be a balance of power between men and women? Will there?
No, there is no balance of power between men and women. They're different. They're opposites. They're black and they're white. You know, they're two completely different animals. And I don't think there ever will be a balance of power. I mean, especially if you're talking sexual power, because that's where, you know, they usually talk is over sex. Well, if a man has many women, he's got the sexual power. And if a woman has exclusivity, she has the sexual power. So,
right. So there is never a balance of power. It's always going to be tipped.
Uh-huh.
That's scary to me, Stefan. It really is, because I mean, as a woman, I like a strong man, but I want a man who's also my equal. And I'm not talking about just in the bedroom. I'm talking about a partner in life. How is
well,
that not
I don't
possible?
Know. I don't know, Wanda. Is there such a thing? I mean, at the end of the day, I think you can hope someone's your equal, or you can dub them as your equal. But what makes equal? I mean, you know, you guys are completely different genders. You're completely different things. You have different hormones, different emotions. I define equal. What does that mean?
I mean, it's not about a salary. It's not about a paycheck that you bring home. It's not about, you know, division of chores. It's an equality in how you see each other, feel about each other, respect each other. I think you should both be servants to each other. I don't think the woman should just be the servant to the man. And like you say, men, your white Christian male in your work area, what you do, what you see, you know, has the most success because they have in his tribe, he's got a woman at home supporting him, taking care of the kids are very traditional is what you're saying. But you don't think it's possible for you? I mean, because I don't really work, but my boyfriend does. So, but I feel like we're equals. But I don't feel like I'm subservient to him in any way. And that's what I think women don't want. I don't think we want to be the subservient person to the other half of a man. But we want to be partners. And I don't understand why that's not possible.
Well, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if that really makes sense. Like, in what sense are you equal? And that's what I'm challenging. I'm asking. So, yeah, I mean, you want to be equal, but what does equal really mean? I think the better word is different. And just say, hey, look, we're different. We do different things. And we complement each other.
Okay, well, that's fair.
And we're reciprocal. I think that you got to fit together. And rather than, like, I think equal is kind of it's a dumb word. I went out with a girl a week ago, and she said to me, I want to be a partner. And I said, well, partner in what? Like, you know, what qualifies you to be my partner? You know, I've got multiple businesses. I've got real estate, all these different things going. She doesn't. What qualifies you to be my partner? Well, you have to bring something different to the table, because two heads that are the same don't need each other. So there better be some sort of different between those two sides to make them valuable to each other. Imagine you both had penises, you know? If you're equal in every way, you'd both have penises, or you'd both have vaginas. Well, that's probably not what you're in it for. You probably want somebody different than you, and the otherness is attractive, not just the sameness.
So instead of saying we want a balance of power and equality, we want a balance of altruism,
balance of different. Give me something different. You know, like it's like this, you know, in my office, I have to go out and make the money, and I have support staff that do everything else.
Right.
You know, they don't go out and do the hard jobs that I do, and I don't do the meticulous jobs that they do.
So you need each other.
Sorry. Yeah, there's a symbiosis,
right?
There's the yin and the yang. These two things need each other. And I think one of the problems in our Western world is the men and women are two the same, and they don't need each other anymore. So then the men never get a woman, and the women never get a man, because they don't need each other. They're two the same, and they don't need each other. But if they're different, and if they bring complementary values to the table, and they complement each other, it's like Coke and chips. Coke is better with chips, and chips is better with Coke. Coke and Coke isn't very good, and chips isn't very good.
So a balance of polarization? Or are those the same thing?
Well, polarization is opposites, but yeah, I guess that's a better way of saying it. Balancing the polar opposites. You know, there's a big difference in the greater the delta, the greater that difference, the more sexy it is usually. The more attraction there is having the balance of different polar opposites. You know, it's like plus and minus on a magnet. You know, when they're the same, they don't go together. But when they're plus and minus, they come together right away.
I like what you're saying, because I will say, when I'm with a man, if I walk all over him, I'm not attracted at all. I want a man to be a man. I do.
Of course. And you know what, Wanda? I'll say it because you're not going to say it. But, you know, women do want to be dominated. They do want a man that's above them. They want a man who's stronger than them. They want a man who probably makes more money than them. They want a man who's probably more assertive than them. And then somehow they want to, you know, this is what I wrote in the book. I said, what women want is they want mastery over their men, but a man who can't be mastered. Well, there's a paradox.
Well, there's a conundrum right there. Right. A paradox. You're right.
Right. So, you know, and men want a virgin whore. They want a virgin who's a whore. Well, guess what? That doesn't exist either. So the virgin whore and the mastery over the man that can't be mastered, well, you know, that's two paradoxes of humanity, and we're just one walking paradox.
Well, I think your book is fascinating. It changed me, and it could not have come at a better time when I did my 1 year no beer challenge, and I did the 28-day challenge of no drinking, because I do have demons. We all have demons. And I didn't think it was possible for me to not drink. I didn't think it was possible for me to take control of the alcohol. And I have taken back control. And reading your book really, it made me stop and think. And no, I didn't take it as, well, I need a man to dominate me. You know, no, but that's not how I took it. I took it as in a totally different light. I took it for myself. And I do want a balance in my relationship. And I do want polarization, as you discuss. I think any man or woman should take the time to read this book. And it is a long read, but it was fascinating to me. And I thank you very much for writing it. I think you're a very intelligent, interesting human being.
Thanks for having me, Wanda.
I'm Wanda Means. I am the author of my book, A Shelf Life of a Secret. And do not forget, from tremendous pain comes an enormous amount of strength.